Welcome to the show. This is Mark Avery for Shooting From the Hip. We're glad you've joined us today. Shooting From the Hip is sponsored by SimTrainer, Dayton area's first indoor range and firearms training facility. We specialize in firearms training and firearms-related issues, including introductory classes for brand-new shooters, recreation shooting, advanced tactical handgun, tactical rifle, and several other classes. So if you're interested in finding out more about SimTrainer and some of the services we offer, you can contact the range directly at 293-3914. That's area code 937-293-3914. Or you can go to our website at sim-trainer.com, and you'll find information about all of our range classes and the schedules for those classes, the different opportunities for membership, and how you can be part of what's going on down there. If you'd like to be part of the show today, call the studio at 457-1290. 457-1290 is the number here into the studio, and we will get you up on the board and let you participate in our lively discussion today. We would love to have you do that. This is really all about what you want to talk about. We cover firearms issues, things related to concealed carry, possession of a firearm, motor vehicles, interaction with law enforcement. We had a fairly lively discussion last week about open carry. So if there's a topic that you would be interested in finding out more about, or you have a question that you'd like to have answered, please call into the show at 457-1290, and we'll be glad to get you on to the show as part of our program as well. One of the things that has gotten quite a bit of attention lately is the question of stand your ground. And what exactly that means, unfortunately, there's been a lot of misrepresentation of what Stand Your Ground is actually about, what Stand Your Ground legislation would do, what that concept is, and how that differs from what we currently have in Ohio, which is actually a couple of different things. We have a duty to retreat in certain places, and we have the ability to defend yourself without first a duty to retreat if you are in other places, which would be inside a residence or in a motor vehicle. There is no first a duty to retreat. So we want to talk about that a little bit today, because partly to debunk some of the myths that have been going around, some of the things that you've heard in the media, some of the things who are either proponents or opponents of that concept, what has been said, and exactly how that would change or relate to what goes on with those who are licensed to carry concealed handgun, and also to those who are not. It applies in both cases. The Stand Your Ground is kind of gotten a lot more attention lately because of the Florida law and what happened down there when George Zimmerman defended himself and in one telling of the story, or in any case, what happened, Trayvon Martin ended up having been shot and did not survive his injuries. And there's a lot of people who have argued that Stand Your Ground is what caused that to occur. The fact that he did not first have a duty to retreat. Mr. Zimmerman did not first have a duty to retreat before he could defend himself, and that was the reason this occurred. And I would tend to argue that is absolutely not the case. And even if Stand Your Ground legislation does pass in Ohio, and we change the legal requirements in Ohio, that really isn't going to change a whole lot, because even if you don't have a duty to retreat, even if the law doesn't require you to retreat first, and I would argue and I would emphasize the retreat only is required if you can do so safely. That's very clearly spelled out in the law. It's spelled out in the Attorney General's guidebook for the concealed carry law. And the whole concept of can you do so safely is a big deal that a lot of people are missing in this whole discussion. If you can't retreat safely, if you can't be assured that you will be able to get to another position of safety when you are attacked, there is no requirement for you to retreat. So what changes then is your requirement to prove that either you did that you were at risk, or that you did not have a duty to retreat, or you had fulfilled any possible duty to retreat. And that then becomes a court question, not so much a question of what do you do at that time. The problem is, the more different traps there are, the more different ways that people can get in trouble legally, the more possibilities that they end up thinking of before they take the action that's necessary to defend their life. Understand this. You can't use deadly force to defend yourself against anything except a deadly threat, a threat to your life or of grave bodily harm, something that would cause you a serious injury that would be a debilitating injury of some sort. Now, if somebody comes at you with a baseball bat, that is clearly a deadly threat. They can cause grave bodily harm that way. If they come at you with a tire iron or some other weapon, a blunt force type weapon, if they come at you with a knife, another possible grave bodily harm situation. Neither of those are automatically considered a deadly weapon, as a firearm is automatically considered a deadly weapon. But if the person is within range to be able to use that weapon against you, it is a deadly threat. It is a risk that would cause you either grave bodily harm or death. And at that point, it would be justified for you to use a firearm in self-defense. That's the first requirement. The next requirement is that you couldn't have started the situation. So if you are instigating some sort of conflict and then you decide, this is going the wrong direction, I really don't want to be part of this, or it goes farther than you expected and the person responds with greater force than you believed perhaps they were capable of, but you started the situation, it's not legitimate for you to use deadly force as a response, or at least you won't be able to justify that use of deadly force as self-defense because you started the situation. And then the last requirement is the duty to retreat, and that's really where this whole question of stand your ground comes in. Right now in Ohio law, you do have a duty to retreat if you are not in a residence or you are not in your motor vehicle. What does that mean? That means that if you can do so safely, your first option is supposed to be to get away. Now, let's talk a little bit about reality. In reality, these situations happen very quickly, often up close and personal, and your ability to retreat safely is going to be very slight. The chances of you being able to do that, virtually nil. So what changes if we change the law? What changes is, what do you have to defend, or what requirements do you have to meet and prove existed in court after the fact, when jurors have 2 weeks to figure out what you had to figure out in 2 to 3 seconds? What are you going to have to do to argue that case and have that shooting ruled as justifiable? I forgot to mention that Jeff Pabro is not here today. He had to work a little bit late, but he is on the phone. So, Jeff, join us on the show.
Mark, I'm glad to be with you on the show today, and I've been following the news articles and the newspaper for several days, and one of the things that I called you before the show and I mentioned I want you to talk about was this whole concept of stand your ground, because it's being used out of context, and I was glad you started off with an explanation of what you did, because our listeners need to understand that ultimately when it comes to self-defense, the individual is justified in using deadly force to defend his or her life when he's faced with a situation where, if he doesn't act in that manner, that he or someone close by could be subject to being killed or seriously injured. And the stand your ground arguments that have been presented recently, I think, are without a lot of a merit, because they don't give fact-specific situations, and that is so critical to this whole analysis. It has to be fact-specific based on an incident-by-incident set of circumstances before we can make any general conclusions, and that's unfortunately not what's happening, and it's causing a lot of confusion. I know you agree with that.
Oh, yes, and part of the problem has been that this is being addressed as an emotional question rather than a logical question. And unfortunately, that's often the case with anything having to do with firearms. People get spun up over the issues without understanding the facts, and then they deal with it from that emotional the sense that there's something just has to be wrong with this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's a couple examples I just wanted to give. The first is, you get out of a car in the parking lot at a grocery store, whatever it might be, and immediately upon exiting your vehicle, you're approached by a subject who's armed with a knife, and he aggressively advances at you, and he tells you very clearly, give me your purse or wallet or I'm going to cut you. Now, there you go. There's a situation where you're faced with a critically serious situation whereby you're going to have to make split-second decisions that could result in harm to yourself if you don't make the proper decision. Now, depending on the distance that he is from you, one option is, and people always make this argument, why don't you run? run the other direction. Well, that's certainly an option, but I'll tell you, Mark, you or I aren't going to have much success if we try to run from something.
No, we're not the speed demons. We were built for, we run hard, not fast.
Yeah, there's another option is to jump in your car, close the door, lock the door, and try to get away. That's an option. Another option is if you're armed, you're a concealed carry holder licensee, and you're armed, you could draw your weapon and use deadly force. Or, depending again, as soon as you draw your weapon, if he sees you, as is typically the case, that you're not an easy target, he might be the one running away. Then you get on your cell phone, you call 911, and the police respond, and they hopefully track him down and make an arrest. But all of those are viable options. I don't want anybody to misunderstand what we're trying to say here, but the big thing here is deadly force is a viable option, period, when you're faced with a deadly encounter. And this whole concept of duty to retreat and the even vaguer or misunderstood concept of standing your ground and what that entails and limitations causes people to be hesitant. And we know that hesitation can sometimes cause bad performance, which could result in an unfavorable outcome on the part of the good guy. And then what I want people to understand is these situations are tense, rapidly evolving, highly stressful, extremely dangerous, and you're forced to make split-second decisions. That we use that phrase a lot, split-second decision. What's that mean? You're forced to make a life-changing decision in about a second and a half. That's how quick it is. And people have to understand that, and that's tough. And to hold people to a high standard just creates all kinds of problems.
It absolutely does. And in fact, that's one of the things that I think is critical for people to understand. And I mentioned this earlier, the jury or the court is going to have all the time that they need to figure out what they think about what you did. And you are going to have a few seconds, very few. We've seen several situations that were recorded on tape, for example. You have a video of it, and you have either 2 to 3 seconds from the time it's obvious that something is wrong to maybe 15 seconds. And are you going to be able to retreat in that period of time? Well, there's a lot of factors that depend on that. But if you're more focused on retreating than you are on defending yourself, that could put you at even greater risk than just dealing with the situation after the fact.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's where, I think all of the arguments, and we were featured in an article in the Dayton City paper last week, and one of the main headlines, and I'm just going to say right now, we didn't have a lot of control over how the article was written. But in order to draw viewers and to draw readers, they put this whole concept of stand your ground as one of the main themes on the front page, and it really had nothing to do with anything in the article, but because it was a hot topic, they throw it out there. And I've seen other magazines doing it. I've seen newspapers do it. I've seen bloggers do it. I've seen different things have been streaming across the internet. They're using that catchphrase, as it is right now, to equate or to link a lot of different unrelated things together, and it's causing confusion. And both the informed and the uninformed are, they're confused. I can't put it any other way. They're confused over the language and how it's being used, and we need to help try to clarify some of those concepts.
And we will do that, but we first need to take our first break for the hour, so if you can hang on, please do. Otherwise, those who'd like to be part of the show, please call in at 457-1290. This is Mark Avery and now Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on 95.7 FM and AM 1290, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Hi, this is Rachel Parsons, spokesperson for the National Rifle Association, and you're on Shooting from the Hip on News Talk Radio, WHIO.
God bless America. This is your blood brother, Ted Nugent, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Avery for Shooting from the Hip. We're glad to have you with us. If you'd like to be part of the show, call the studio at 457-1290. 457-1290 will get you on the board, and we will try to get your calls answered as quickly as possible. Out with us also today, Jeff's not in the studio, but he's called in to be part of the show. Jeff, we got some calls on the phone, so let's take one from Mike calling with a question about or perspective on Stand Your Ground. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hey, Mark, Jeff, good to talk to you. You know, I think a lot of people have gotten messed up on the stand your ground thing. I mean, it doesn't give you the ability to say, hey, buddy, I don't like you, get out of my sight or I'm going to shoot you. It doesn't do that at all. I mean, it basically, like you said, only takes away your duty to retreat, and I think that's where a lot of people get twisted around the axle over this thing, is they really don't understand what it is.
I would tend to agree with that. I would say that, and that's part of the problem and part of the reason why I think there is so much misunderstanding and misrepresentation of what is portrayed in the in a lot of the media outlets and in a lot of the news reports, and by those who are opposing this Stand Your Ground are doing it based on facts or factors that aren't related to the truth of the issue that is the whole duty to retreat question.
Well, and I think the reason some people do it is that they really want us to have to second guess ourselves in a deadly encounter just to prove that, you know, people shouldn't have firearms to defend themselves. And, you know, being in
Are you still there, Mike?
I'm still here.
Okay.
You know, being an old and slow guy, you know, my duty to retreat is pretty much satisfied by the fact I can't outrun anybody. And I'm going to have to do what I have to do should that situation ever arise. You know, I think it would definitely, like you said, if we had that passed, it would clear a lot of issues up, and I would hope the legislature would start working on it.
Well, and there has been some beginnings of things that are going on in the legislature, but the problem is this whole politics issue has gotten in, like, you know, politics doesn't happen, like it doesn't involved in everything having to do with guns. I think the issue that happened with Trayvon Martin and George Zimmerman in Florida has colored the issue somewhat, has made the issue much more emotional than rational, and I think that's part of the reason why we're not seeing much progress. We've already seen that reported from the folks who are dealing with those in the Ohio General Assembly. People just don't want to address that question because right now it's almost in the too hard pile. And I think that's unfortunate because what really will happen is if we have a situation that occurs and somebody uses legitimate self-defense, they could very well be caught in a trick because they've done what they're supposed to do, but because of the way the law is written, it's a little bit ambiguous as to what constitutes safely retreat, and I think that just causes a big problem all the way around. We're going to take a break now here at the bottom of the hour for the news to go out to the News Center with Daryl Bauer. When we come back after the news, we'd like you to be part of the show, so call the studio at 457-1290. This is Mark Avery for Shooting from the Hip on 95.7 FM and AM 1290 News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Now more Shooting from the Hip on 95.7 FM and AM 1290, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Thank you, Daryl. This is Mark Avery for Shooting from the Hip. We're glad to have you back with us. If you'd like to be part of the show, call the studio at 457-1290. 457-1290 is the number here into the studio. And let's go back out and talk to Jeff, who's not in the studio but sharing with us today. Jeff, welcome back to the show.
Mark, thanks. And I just wanted to mention the last caller brought up a couple of points that are worth further discussion. The first is that we have to realize, not only here in Ohio, but around the country, the incident down in Florida is an isolated incident. It does not have national ramifications. The justice system in Florida is fully in operation, doing what it's supposed to do to take care of that. There are not similar like incidents because each incident stands on its own merits, and the criminal justice system approaches it that way. Unfortunately, there's too many people, like you said earlier, that are making a political debacle of this whole situation, and they're, you know, on the one hand, they're calling for justice, and on the other hand, they're not letting justice take its course. And we just have to sit back and let justice take its course in this particular case and realize that there'll be other incidents, and they, even though they might initially sound like they're similar, they're not. They have fact-specific circumstances that have to be addressed each and every time, and they'll be dealt with in the respective states and jurisdictions where they occur, and they're not going to be compared, so to speak, always to what happened down there.
Well, I think it's interesting to note that Stand Your Ground has been brought up in that case, but there's one of two things that we know about that, and we don't know which is the case, but the one argument, it was that George Zimmerman was on the ground, Trayvon Martin sitting on top of him and smashing his head into the ground, and the other is that he chased him down. It doesn't matter which of those situations is correct. Stand Your Ground isn't a question in either one of them.
Well, and that's exactly right. And the second example I wanted to just kind of throw out to our callers is you're laying at home in bed late at night, just getting ready to turn in for the evening, and all of a sudden you hear the smash of glass breaking outside your window. You look outside and you see that somebody is breaking into your vehicle, your brand new 2012 Ford F-150 pickup truck. And you tell your wife, go ahead and call the police, call 911. You get up, you throw on some clothes, you strap on your gun, you go around the front door, you continue to watch, you see that he now enters into your vehicle. So you decide to walk outside and you yell, hey, get out of my car, get out of there, or something to the effect. And at that point, he grabs your crowbar and starts walking up towards you as you're standing just outside your front door to your residence. Now, we know that deadly force is not justified to stop the commission of a theft offense. However, that incident, as I described it, just transitioned from a theft offense to a potentially life-threatening situation. And there again, like I mentioned earlier, the homeowner has a variety of options. He can turn and run into his house and lock the door. That's one option. Or, depending on the circumstances, he can draw his gun, point it at the subject, tell him to drop the crowbar or run away. Or, if he continues to advance on him and he feels his life's threatened, he can shoot him. And those are viable options that the homeowner can certainly take. And now there's people who are going to say, well, that shouldn't be the option. The people that are against Stand Your Ground legislation think that people should run away at all costs, no matter what. That should only as a last resort should use deadly force. Well, there again, last resort is not the law. It never should be the law. Deadly force should be justified when you believe your life or someone else's life is in imminent jeopardy. And imminent jeopardy means that if you don't act, you or someone else is going to be seriously harmed or killed, period. I think that's clearer than people make it, and it's the lawyers and the naysayers that cloud the issue, and they like to use examples like that and say, well, that's a theft offense, and you shouldn't be able to use a gun in a theft offense. Well, transition from a theft offense to a deadly force situation just like that.
Yeah, I think it's important for people to realize that you can use force to defend property. You just can't use deadly force.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And then, of course, people say, well, he put himself in that situation where he had to use deadly force. Here's my argument, and as a police officer, I understand this is my personal stance, and I also believe that, remember, the criminal precipitated the incident. The homeowner wasn't laying in his bed begging for someone to come and break into his house. The homeowner was doing what he was supposed to do, turn in for the evening, planning on going, being a responsible person the next day, going to work, and the criminal decides to pray in the middle of the night under cover of darkness. And he created the situation, period. End of conversation. And if the outcome was that he chose to grab the crowbar and try to advance on the homeowner with the hopes that the homeowner would go inside so he could get away, that's his choice, too. He could have just got out of the car and ran. I mean, that would be the more viable choice, I would think. But the fact that he grabbed the crowbar, he pretty much dictated the situation. And there's still too many people out there who don't understand when I talk about rapidly evolving, highly stressful, ever-changing. That's exactly the scenario I'm talking about, and there's many more like it.
Jeff, thanks very much. I know you've got to get back to some of the other things that you're taking care of today. Let's go back out to the phones and talk to Les, who's calling from Jamestown. Les, welcome to the show. Are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
Thanks, Mark. I take martial arts.
Okay.
And our sensei is a 10th degree black belt. And, you know, the thing he has always said is, you really don't have time to think. You need to be prepared to react more than think about the situation you're in.
I saw a really interesting statement just this week that it's about a situation like that, and people are saying, you know, I will rise to the occasion. That's not the case. You don't rise to the occasion. You fall on your training.
Exactly. If you're not trained and you don't know what you're doing, you're not going to have time to think it out.
Exactly correct.
Able to react. And one other thing I wanted to point out too, you know, talking about the political ramifications. When I saw when they flashed the picture that you've seen of Trayvon Martin on the news so many different times,
as that innocent little 14-year-old,
I said, that's not a 19-year-old.
Exactly.
You know. I am an NRA lifetime member, I know that the media doesn't share our point of view. But I agree that it needs to be clear cut that, in the time that it takes to turn around to get in your car or try to find a way of escape, that person could have closed the distance between you and already done you serious bodily harm, and then you're in worse shape than you started out with.
You're absolutely correct about that, and that's what Jeff was talking about, is rapidly evolving situations. If you are hoping to run away, but you're not already on your way, it could very well be too late.
Well, our sensei has also said, take them out to the point where you don't have to worry about them running after you, then run.
That works, yes. Neutralize the threat first and then get to cover.
Exactly.
Okay, thanks very much for calling the show. Let's go out and talk to Jedrick. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks. I have one pretty quick question.
Okay.
And then I have one scenario for you.
All right.
My quick question is, I like to go boating on state parks. Am I allowed to have my concealed carry with me? I can't find any straight answers online or in any sort of available resource.
State parks are covered by the state preemption law. So that says that if you, the state can't, you know, the one law for the state applies to everything. So basically, your carry on a motor vehicle, in whether it's a boat or a vehicle, it's all the same. We need to take a real quick break. Hang on for just a second as we go out quickly to the news center. Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Avery, and if you'd like to be part of the show, call the studio at 457-1290, and we'll try to get to you before we run out of time here in just a few more minutes. When we had to take that breaking news alert, we were talking with Jedrick, who had a question about concealed carry in state parks. And welcome back to the show.
Thanks.
The main thing to be understood is that as long as you're not in an occupied building, which would be one of the, you know, like the ranger's office or something like that, where the business is conducted, that does not apply to shelters, to restrooms, to, you know, just the regular operating areas. It doesn't include any of those, only the occupied buildings where the offices would be, for example. You can carry in all of the state park. Now, as far as carry in a motor vehicle, and that doesn't include the water vehicles, so a boat, you'd have to have a concealed handgun license, as you would, you know, anywhere else, and you follow the rules for carrying a motor vehicle. So if you don't have a license, you have to make sure that the gun is unloaded, or if you're not carrying pursuant to a license, or if it's not a handgun, it would have to be unloaded when you're in the vehicle, those kinds of things.
That is the exact answer I was looking for.
Okay.
That's what I needed. All right. And then one other. I have a scenario, just a quick one.
Okay.
I know of a man that was sent to jail. He was walking out of a bar or a restaurant. I don't remember what it was, but he walked out of the back door. And when he opened the back door and he looked up, bam, there's a gun in his face. And he said, oh, my goodness, and he reacted, and he took that gun right out of the other man's hand, turned it around, and shot him dead right there.
Okay. And how did he go to jail?
He went to jail. They said that because he took the gun from the other man, he was no longer armed and a deadly threat.
That's unfortunate because, I mean, first he had no way of knowing that the other person didn't have another gun. He had just been threatened. The person had clearly demonstrated a willingness to cause him grave bodily harm, and that's the justification for deadly force. It really sounds like he didn't have an adequate defense. That's unfortunate. But, I mean, without knowing any more of the facts than that, as you described it, I would not have thought that he would ended up in jail. And that's, you know, again, there could have been a lot more situation involved than either of us know, or at least have related. And so that, you know, it's hard to say on this side of things without any more data. But if you, just because you take a gun from someone and you use it against them, that doesn't mean that you have made them no longer a threat. They've already indicated that they're willing to be a threat, that they're willing to cause grave bodily harm, and that they have at least had the capability to do so. And the fact that you took it from them and used it against them does not mean that they were no longer a threat.
Okay.
I mean, that's my view of the situation, again, not having any more facts than we already have.
Well, and you're perfectly right. I may be missing some details, but that was my question. If I was in the same situation, is that true? Am I missing details?
Yeah, I'm gonna say that there's something we don't know about what was presented to the court, and that the court's decision was based on some additional information that neither of us have. Thanks very much for calling the show, and let's go out and talk to Bob, who's calling from Beaver Creek. Bob, welcome to the show.
Thank you. In fact, I was earlier today at a gun shop looking at handguns. I've had, over the course of time, a number of rifles, but not for years. I'm in my late 60s. I have injuries from an auto accident, arthritis, cancer, and some other things.
So you're not going to be running, huh?
You know, well, you tell me I've got to run, you got to be kidding.
Yeah, and that's kind of the whole point of if you can do so safely, which unfortunately gets lost in a lot of the discussion about the duty to retreat. The do so safely means that if you have physical limitations that keep you from being able to retreat at all, or certainly to be able to retreat effectively. How is it that you're supposed to be able to retreat as a prerequisite for using deadly force if you are already at imminent jeopardy?
And how am I physically going to defend myself? You know, over 40 years ago, I wrestled in high school and college, but, you know, I couldn't take on any healthy person one-on-one with any hope of saving my backside.
Right. And that's kind of the point. We have several people that shoot at our range that have physical limitations of one type or another. And they're very effective with their handgun, but if they had to run or if they had to physically fight someone off, they wouldn't be able to do that. And, I mean, I fall in that category. I'm a pretty big guy. I'm not in terrible shape. But, you know, if I had to go up against somebody who was a regular fighter and had plenty of, you know, that they were in good shape and they had a lot of practice, I would not stand a chance. So I'm not going to allow those situations to occur to the best of my ability. I'm going to avoid them any chance I get. I'm going to pay attention to my surroundings and make sure that I know the situation, keep my head on a swivel, and not let things surprise me as much as possible. But if somebody wanted to ambush me, I would be in that situation as well. My ability to physically defend myself would probably not be enough in a situation where somebody was committed and they were better trained or better practiced than I am at personal self-defense.
And I do have one sort of semi-rhetorical question about the Trayvon Martin case.
Okay.
The person who edited the 911 tapes to make it sound racist has not been charged with inciting a riot. Why not?
That's a great question.
Not an accident,
yeah.
And that has caused tremendous stress across this country.
Well, I'm not sure that by itself caused all the stress. I think there's a lot of other people who have to wear that same mantle as well. Fortunately, that person was fired. I think that was appropriate, but, you know, I wonder just to what extent that person was the scapegoat for an attitude that may be a little bit more pervasive at that particular news outlet than they would like to believe.
No, I agree there, but sometimes you have to take the linchpin and make it publicly unattractive for others who would do the same and merely appear to lose their job and go on to something equally remunerative, you know.
Yeah, well, I agree. And
that was a criminal act. It was the alteration of evidence, because that 911 tape is evidence.
Well, okay, but what's broadcast on the air, having been edited, is not really something that's admissible as evidence. It's just a matter of, you know, it was pretty tacky. It was the wrong thing to do, and clearly that person paid a price for it. We don't know exactly what the level of that price was. Bob, thanks very much for calling the show. We're just about out of time, and I just want to remind folks that these issues are not going to be resolved overnight. There's an awful lot of detail, a lot of information that needs to get out. Do your very best to let your legislators know what you think about these issues. If you don't know how to contact them, you need to find out. They need to know your name, and they need to be able to address you and recognize that the calls are coming in from somebody who's paid attention. Thanks very much for being part of this show. This is Mark Avery for Shooting from the Hip. Stay tuned at the top of the hour for Bob and Gloria with There Is a Season on 95.7 FM and AM 1290 News Talk Radio, WHIO.